everybody, and welcome to a very special midweek motorsport extra programme. We're live. I'm in the blue room at Wellingborough Towers. Excuse me.
But I quite like Wellingborough Towers.
I'm sure I'll be able to get some wheels for the Porsche down there. Tonight,
this programme is brought to you by Wellingborough Tires and BT Openreach, your only choice.
Yes, well done to Tim for sorting out our technical problems. I'm still getting the bed at full volume there.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for being patient with us last night on Midweek's Motorsport. Wednesday night. Tonight, we are live. It is 5 minutes past eight in the UK. And at the moment, when you should be watching nationwide qualifying, for those of you in the States on speed.
Because anyone's going to watch that.
Well, yeah. Instead, what you've got are two beautiful Dodge Chargers being talked about, which frankly, comparing the old Dodge Charger with the new Dodge Charger, it looks like an SRT8 as well that they've got there. Very nice. Far better than watching a rainy Daytona, which it is at the moment. That proves that we absolutely live. The Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective is in effect, and already one or two of you on there. Don't forget, get on there or you'll be missing the best part of the show. Tonight, it's all about stock cars, and in a packed programme, we'll be talking Daytona 500, of course, kicking off the season proper this weekend. And the good news in the UK is it will be on Sky Sports as a one-off deal at the moment. And what else we'll be talking about? Well, watch your rear. Bump drafting is back here, with the drivers giving their opinions on the new rules for 2010. Now, we've already seen the new phenomenon in stock car racing. Dan Arca, GoDaddy's little girl, is big news. And one we'll be talking a little bit about that as well. And whilst there's a woman making the pre-season headlines, purse sizes are down. That's not a fashion item. And, of course, in the Cup, will this year be another big Johnson win? Plus, we'll be taking a brief look at the support series. But first, rather than looking forward, we'll actually look back as Dex dissects the duels from Thursday night. Declan, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you all?
I'm actually taking a breath after that, because I've been running up and down snow hills doing a bit of winter sports with Martin Haven before this tonight, and dashed back to do that with Martin Haven and Small Boys, doing a bit of sliding in honour of the Winter of Olympics.
The important question was, were you using a tea tray, or were you using one of those thick fibrous nitrate type plastic sacks?
We were using proper Swiss bobs.
Oh, of course.
Very small Swiss bobs, sit under your backside, two handles on the side, you lean right back, loose style, feet first, whoosh, down the hill. Fantastic.
I bought a 1988 Chevy Blazer from Swiss bobs.
Martin broke his, interestingly, and the snow, he broke the snow as well, actually. Right, before we get sidetracked too much, because I do have dinner to make this evening, and it's a Valentine's Day weekend. Did we have a big love-in as far as the duels were concerned? I only saw the better part of the second one on Thursday evening, but it looked to me, Dex, straight away as if we had some pretty competitive racing.
Oh my goodness, yes. It was the first indication that the marginally increased restrictor plate, in terms of size, not in terms of restriction, beautiful use of English, it could make a significant difference. One thing that was quite obvious was that, and we mentioned this briefly on the show on Wednesday, that these things still move about a lot, an awful, awful lot. And the astonishing amount of lateral movement in packs.
Dex, to be fair, we've said this before, that one thing about the new car, which we can't stress enough, is that when they go sideways, they do seem to be controllable to a point.
Yes.
And I don't have a problem with that. I actually like to see the cars moving around and see the drivers working.
Absolutely. Absolutely the case. But what you're seeing now with the slightly bigger restrictor is you're seeing the ability to get out of the throttle a bit more and it not really be that much of a problem. It's almost, we're at the stage now where with this particular setup is that if you get out of the throttle marginally. You're not going to be punished too much because they've got a little bit more pickup and you can get back on it and get back up to speed quicker. It also is going to see a little bit more, dynamic passing. I'll give you an example. We saw it in turn three where early on in the second heat, Juan Pablo Montoya was able to get an unbelievably effective slingshot sweeping down under Dale Jr. And that was, a lot of it was to do with being able to get, sucked up in the draft and just having that little bit more throttle now that will allow you to make like a clean break from people. That's obviously one thing. That the self-regulation of bump drafting is another. We saw all sorts of issues with that over the last 8 days because of the finale we saw to the Bud shootout. And then again on the last lap of, particularly in the last lap of the second duel, when Tony Stewart almost pipped Casey Kane to the line.
Oh, that was an outstanding finish.
But he wouldn't have been in that position if he hadn't been unceremoniously punted up the rear end and pushed forward by Juan Montoya. Which gave him sort of additional impetus and probably added 15, 20 feet, maybe more, maybe even 30 feet to his...
That wasn't bump drafting, that was actually an accident.
that was him running into him. But it made a massive difference.
Of course it did.
But the issue with bump drafting, I have to say, is actually you link it then back to the fact that the cars are moving around sideways so much. And I predict that we will see, on more than one occasion, guys get very squiffy and definitely there will be some accidents purely because somebody will time the bump drafting wrong. If you don't square yourself up with the car in front and get it absolutely right, you will quite easily literally just push these people into a spin, and you don't have to be that far off to that. And therefore, with the cars moving around as they are, you've got to have a lot of skill to do this properly. And it's risky. And the fact is, as you said, that NASCAR has effectively washed their hands of it. They decided to let the drivers do this themselves and regulate it themselves, which means they may as well have not bothered at all. Because as we saw from, if anybody didn't see it, the final lap, the first lap of the green-white checker at the finale of the Bud shootout, when Jeff Gordon ended up with his rear wheels off the ground. It wasn't bump drafting. It was almost some sort of sexual act. So
we'll be talking about bump drafting in more depth later on, if you pardon the pun, as we're talking about sexual acts there. Later on in the programme, you're listening to Midweek Motorsport. Don't forget, on the Facebook Listeners Collective as well, hello to Carol Brink, who is on there at the moment, and also to Ollie Meggett, Joe Taylor, who I know are listening in. Now, Tim, we've got quite a lot of drivers to listen to tonight.
We do.
Who are we going to start with?
We're going to start with the man who won that first of the two Gatorade duels, Jimmy Johnson.
And certainly an exciting final few laps, and with the car on older tyres and the push that I was getting from the RCR cars and from the 18, when they'd get close to the rear bumper of my car, I'd literally start turning the wheel right to save it, and just left my foot in it, and it stuck. It didn't turn around on me. So I'm just thankful I made it back, and I think we put on one heck of a race.
And basically there, Declan, underlying what you were talking about bump drafting, as I say, we're going to come back to that with a couple of drivers talking about the change in the rules later on. But a point that came up there from what Jimmy Johnson said was tyre wear. A lot was being made by the commentators about 34, 35 laps of Daytona on the tyres, and it was quite clearly an issue. And they got, some guys, look at Sam Hornish in the second duel, for example. His car just went away almost at the flick of a switch. Now, whether he had another problem as well, I'm not sure, but he was clearly in tyre trouble. And in fact, he just brought it down the apron and parked it because there was no way he was going to be involved if he had to come and do a late pit stop. But tyre wear this weekend for the 500, and let's sort of look to that before we talk about the season in general. Tyre wear is going to be an issue this weekend.
It is, and what I found extraordinary, and this is sort of almost a piece of investigative journalism and putting two and two together, but if you look back first of all at the race, the first race, and the key players in that were Jimmy Johnson, who won it. He's never won a Gatorade Jewel before. And Max Pappas, who made his way, raced his way, and Michael Matter, who raced their way into the 500. Max and Jimmy both took or stayed out and didn't take tires at the final pit stop with about five laps to go. I beg your pardon. I think it was four. What I found extraordinary was that the tires on the cars that were fresher, the cars that pitted, went off at a rate that meant that there was, you know, Johnson could hold his own. And what worried me is that there's almost very little life in these tires. We found with Jeff Burton in the start of the duel, the tire blew spectacularly, ripping the right front panels off. And it was probably because of the amount of cast they had in the front. So they're running risk on excessive wear, and these things just aren't sturdy enough. And this is not a new issue. But what I was amazed by was more the lack of real advantage that the cars that took four tires had after four laps in the duel, because Johnson could hold them off for the win. Mm. And that amazed me. And also the same thing with Max, that Max was able to hang around and had enough to get the stick to make a pass, as he did late on, to go past Todd Bodine to get the car into the race. So I'd be quite concerned about these tires, not necessarily about when to change them and when not to, but generally about how fast they go off and how long in a stint these cars will have to go with tires that will effectively have no grip in them anymore.
All good points, and we'll hear from Max Pappas, in fact, in just a few moments' time here on Midweek Motorsport. It's our stock car NASCAR season preview. But let's check in now with Casey Kane, of course, won the second of the Gatorade Duels on Thursday night. Only just, though, this is what he had to say.
It's difficult to explain, you know, in words what this means for us. You know, it's the beginning of the season for me, my first ever laps on a cup car around Daytona. And I mean, it is like, I'm speechless, because you guys need to really, you know, I know you know this, but those guys out there, they are the best of the best in the world. And when you can compete with them, and when you have someone like Mark Martin coming to you and say, I'm really happy for you that you made the show, it means the world for me.
That was Max Pappas, of course, talking about the Daytona 500, but trouble at this end.
Well, when I said we'd be hearing from him in a few moments' time, I didn't realise it was quite that quickly. However, he said with his boyish enthusiasm fully recharged, Casey Kane it was who, first of all, actually, no, Dex, first of all, before we hear from Casey Kane, Max Pappas, we love him, he's a great guy, friend of the show, never refuses us an interview and never just gives us 5 minutes. We could do 2 hours with him. Loves the listener questions, loves interacting. I love the fact that he's in the big show. It's like when Ron Fellows or Boris Said or any of the guys that, you know, we can walk up to and talk to and have a cup of coffee with get into one of these races. I really feel as though that almost one of my mates is racing this weekend.
Well, yeah, I felt the same way when Andy Lally got in.
Yep.
Got into his first race last year. But for Max, this is, Max has put his heart and soul into this. He's invested so much of himself into getting this right, and how hard he works, and, you know, moving his family to that part of the world, and just it, this has become his life. And he got out of the car and he was crying, and it was just fabulous to see how much it meant to him. And the paddock has warmed to him in a way, and the media have warmed to him in an astounding way because of that, because of the enthusiasm he shows and the fact that he wears his heart on his sleeve. And we love him, they love him, and nobody there wanted him to fail. Everybody wanted to see him make the 500. It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
But as we've said before, what's not to like about Max Pappas? Because he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a bit like when we talk to Dario or Marino or Andy Prior, and I'm trying to work through people who are in different forms of the sport. I mean, when we had Ari Vatanen on the show, these are people who are passionate about all parts of the sport, not just pigeonholed into one. Jimmy Johnson, the same, you know, when we've talked to him in the past. I'm not surprised that people... I'm not surprised that people take it to the heart, but it's really nice that they have taken a genuinely nice bloke to their heart. Hey, I wouldn't like to race against him, don't get me wrong. You know, I wouldn't like to be the guy going side by side at turn three with him at the best part of 200 miles an hour on the last lap if it was all coming down to it, because, you know what to expect from him. But as a person, I like him loads. Another person...
Can I just add to that?
Yeah, of course.
I said, you wouldn't want to be racing against him. I tell you who certainly won't want to be racing against him this weekend, Brad Keselowski.
Oh, no.
As you might remember from
he called him out on the show, didn't he?
He did, and said he's like an elephant, and he hasn't forgotten. So, Brad,
in so many ways,
making his debut from Penske, keep your head on a swivel.
We won't be hearing from Brad this weekend, on this show, rather. If it's big for Max Packmas, and how many times has that been said in the past?
Stop.
It's absolutely huge for Michael McDowell, who's also in the big show at the weekend. Let's hear from him.
You know, I actually feel like I've already won it. You know, going into this race, we had high hopes, but it's just, you never know. You're racing for four spots today and a lot of great cars out there. And when that last caution came out, I knew we had a good shot at it. Our car was really good on the short run. The pit stop before, we'd made an adjustment and really just killed the car. So I knew if we had a second shot at it, that we had a good shot, and got the pushes that we needed and picked the right line at the right time. And, just fortunate that we had tires sitting there ready to go, and just good calls by the guys. And it's just unbelievable, like Max said, a couple sports car guys sitting up here, and, it's a tough world to make it in. This is the best of the best, and I had my shot in Cup with Michael Waltrip in 2008 and didn't really know if I'd ever get back here. So it's awesome to be here starting the Daytona 500 and really looking forward to this season, driving the 55 for Prism.
Quick word about Michael. Another great guy. Clearly knows what he's achieved, Dex. And, a guy who could be not a factor overall right at the front of the race, but... He's done himself no harms, has he?
He's had an absolutely extraordinary career. Or in fact, he's having another extraordinary career. Don't forget, he was 20 and he raced in Champ Car.
Yeah.
In the last season of Champ Car, he was 20 years old and he did.
People
some
do forget that though, Dex. He just appeared from nowhere.
Yeah, and he went away, couldn't, no money, went back to Arca again. Worked his way up, literally almost had a year off, did a handful of ARCA races. The following season came back, runner-up to Frank Kimmel in the championship. He was brilliant. I'm really pleased for Michael Waltrip. Michael Waltrip doesn't get enough credit for the faith he puts in young guys or in people. And he's done it. He gave him a chance. It didn't work out. And now, literally, this is him pulling himself off the floor again. And he's running for Prism, not a big team. Stunning that he's made it. Absolutely fantastic. And again, one of the other good guys, and we like him. A lot of enthusiasm. He's an all-round racer, and I'm just delighted he's made it in.
Just a point about Michael Waltrip. Anybody who thinks that Michael Waltrip is just cruising into potential retirement, the split screen on the second Gatorade Duel last night when he was watching to work out whether he'd got into the race was absolutely phenomenal. We'll hear from Michael Waltrip. Ollie Meggett on the Facebook Collective asked if we could hear from him, and I agree exactly with what Ollie said. He clearly still has the passion. Have we got a clip from Michael, did you say there, Tim? Well, we'll let you find that in just a moment, but before we do that, can we hear from the second duel winner? That was indeed Casey Kane.
Once I got behind Tony, I felt like I was in a really good position and just needed to take advantage when I got the right push, and Kurt gave me that in turn one, and I was able to skunder Tony, and from there I just tried to keep the two behind me. He was really strong throughout the whole race, so I felt if I could keep him behind me that I'd have a decent shot at winning it, trying to beat Tony. So it was close, but we were able to pull it off. Feels good to win at Daytona.
Is that the did I hear right last night, Dex? That's the first time he's ever won a race at Daytona.
Yes, it is.
That's an amazing stat, isn't it? Because, he's been so close to the top of the sport for so long now, it seems. And for him to Has he been third three times now? That was another stat that I should have wrote these down last, or written these down.
He's never, but you see, this is interesting, and we'll be coming to this later with him when we talk about our Daytona 500 predictions, but you have to remember he's run an awful lot of his career, if not all of his career, in Dodges, and not necessarily in the right Dodge team, and at a time when, in plate circumstances, you would argue that there's probably only a handful of teams you really should be in if you're going to win, probably either a DEI car or a Hendrix car or anything with Roush Yates power. So, yeah, he's done very well, but I'm not super surprised that, of course, he wins his first Daytona race with Yates power and a Ford.
That was pointed out as well. You know, you've got the ponies under the hood, and you know exactly what you've got for that. You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. It's our NASCAR and Daytona 500 special. Thanks for joining us if you are online with us live tonight here in the UK. What is it, 25 past 8? Raining at Daytona at the moment. We'll keep you up to date if we can with what's going on there at the moment. A number of you, including, as we mentioned, Ollie Meggett and Carol Brink as well, just commenting on Michael Waltrip and his, well, still clear passion for this huge race in stock car racing. He was right on the bubble when the second of the Gatorade Jewels were running on Thursday night, and it's the usual complicated thing depending on who went where and who raced in on speed, who got the transfer positions. Watching on the split screen, and in fairness, I thought the TV coverage of the Jewels was pretty good, to have him sitting in the studio watching and virtually biting his nails. Let's hear from Michael Waltrip. Ollie asked, and we shall deliver. Oh, Tim, don't let me down now. I built that one up for you.
You know, we're race car drivers, and he did his job, and I'm so grateful and thankful that it worked out. You know, obviously the teams that won the race were locked in too. So everybody, you know, people show up to race. You don't, just because you're locked in doesn't mean you roll over or there wouldn't be a race. So I knew Scott would race. I knew he wasn't going to think about quitting or giving up. And I'm just thankful that he had a car there at the end that he could do the job with.
Talking about Scott's speed there and the way he...
Bit of a love in between them.
Well,
afterwards.
You know, but it's that thing, you know, isn't it, Dex? And we've mentioned the sort of, in the past, it would be easy for people who don't need to race in to just not give of their best, and that's not what happened with Scott Speed on Thursday evening. And you know, that
well,
has
there is a point. There is a point to be made about the fact that he possibly overtook Casey Mears under the yellow line on the backstretch, and the problem with that is that it did two things. It meant that Casey Mears got knocked out, and I thought Casey Mears raced really well. And it meant that Michael got in. So it's a shame that it happened that way, and there's a little bit of controversy. But, yeah, it was great to see, I suppose, that he didn't back into it in some respect. He got in ultimately on his speed in qualifying based on... I'm just glad he's in. I think he's a colourful character. He's really good on restrictor plate tracks. I know he struggled a bit this week, so I wouldn't be surprised if he really performed well on at his part of his farewell to the 500. So I'm glad he's in.
Let's hear from Scott Speed now.
The race for us was more like the race was for everyone else who didn't have to get into the race. But nonetheless, we were able to get into the race. It added bonuses that a fellow Toyota driver, Mr. Waltrip here, can now run, which is cool because, you know, I think that's a guy that needs to be in that show.
Short and sweet. James Broomhead on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective says, Michael already has quote of the year for, I don't care what he does with his toenails when Scott Speed raced his way in. Fantastic. Fantastic stuff. We'll stay with the 500 for the time being because obviously that's going to start the season off at the weekend. And part of what we trailed at the beginning of the show, we've already started talking about when it came in. Dex, you've alluded to it already. I think it's going to be a talking point and hopefully not an issue at the weekend. There have been some rules changes, specifically to bring back the bump drafting that was the, in inverted commas, outlaws. Before we talk about it, let's hear the thoughts of former Craftsman truck champion and now firmly established in the race for the chase for the cup for the thing. Here's Greg Biffle.
I'm really anxious to see, you know, in practice what it's going to be like, you know, with the bigger plate and all the things going on. NASCAR backing off on the bump draft rule, giving us a bigger plate, how the car sucks up to the car in front of it, how much we're going to be able to push here. I'm really anxious to see kind of how it stacks up.
As are we all. Now, if the bigger plate, and frankly, you know, I could never have enough of better sucking up, then if that has been certainly a plus point in the early part of this Daytona 500 weekend and probably the whole season, I'm still, I think, like you, Declan, somewhat undecided on bump drafting. I saw two or three incidents within the small amount of viewing in the duels where injudicious bumping, and we heard Jimmy Johnson talking about it before, cars getting crossed up. I'm still undecided on that.
Yeah, the problem is I almost have a bit of sympathy for NASCAR because it's so difficult to legislate, particularly in that type of track.
We said this, didn't we? We said this a few weeks ago on the Wednesday show. How do you police it? You say you can't do it, and then, you know, what's bump drafting? What's deliberate? What's not? What, you know, it's really hard.
But the problem is NASCAR have taken the Homer Simpson approach here, which is Homer Simpson famously once said, if something is difficult to do, it's not worth doing. And it seems to me they've a little bit, instead of really taking a hardline approach to this and working out how to police it, they've just said, no, it's up to you guys to police it. And as he said before, that means that, you know, come the last lap, we've got every opportunity for something crazy to happen, because there will be, if you go back to Talladega, where, to be perfectly honest, it's easier to bump draft at Talladega. You've got longer straights. It's harder to bump draft particularly through the corners of Daytona, and it's very dangerous, obviously. But if you think back to the finale at Talladega in the April race when Edward nearly went into the crowd, that he and Keselowski hooked up, and literally they may as well have been nailed together. And that sort of thing I just can't see happening at Daytona. It's a recipe for disaster. So it's one of these things I think the early start part of the race, if we get anything big happening early on, I'd like to think that the drivers will take matters into their own hands and back off. I just don't see it happening. I think when push comes to shove, end of the race, the red mist will go down and it'll happen. People want to get, it's the only way people can get to the front.
But Declan, didn't we say on the Midweek Motorsport show when this was first announced that bump drafting was back, that you have to have a huge amount of confidence and trust in your drivers as a series, NASCAR as a series has to have that. And unfortunately, it only takes one person to be slightly injudicious, possibly not even deliberately, but it could be disastrous in so many ways. On top of that, I still say what I said then is that anybody who is trying to, I'm going to pick my words very carefully here, who is trying to take advantage of the bump drafting rule to move someone out of the groove, and I think everybody knows what I'm talking about there, or someone who does it deliberately to take someone out in a less subtle way, then they have to be parked. And I'm, you know, and we're sitting here at the start of the season, and I'm wondering who's going to be the first casualty. And if it's a big name, it's still got to happen. I said that then, and I still say it now. They've got to nail their colours to the mast. And when I say they, I mean NASCAR and the race stewards. They've got to nail their colours to the mast early on and say, guys, we're all racers. We understand about racing and Rubens racing, but there's a line you can't cross.
I completely agree. And as I said, I think that's, anything happens early on, I think what will have to happen is the stewards will have to get involved. Problem is, we do have this issue, this cynical view of NASCAR that the show and the spectacle and the big one is all part of it, and they almost, there's an understanding that they let this happen because they the crowd like it, and we'll just have to see. Absolutely, I'm again with you. The problem, one of the issues, John, is that I suppose the reality is that it takes away from the spectacle of plate racing, and it is a spectacle. And we talk about this, and we do love it. I don't want to see it every race, but I want to see it four times a year.
Yeah,
but it does. You take this away, and you would take some of the spectacle away.
No, I don't disagree with that. I don't. We said again, and I refer the honourable gentleman to my earlier answer in Midweek Motorsport. I do think that NASCAR have a problem with this, and I think that they acted responsibly when they took bump drafting away. What they did do was take some of the razzmatazz, the spectacle, the crash bang wallop, to take it down to very, very basic levels out of the sport. And unfortunately, some of the races suffered for that. There was no doubt about that in my mind in the middle to the end of last year, and certainly before, certainly when we got into the early part of the chase. You know, we on the longer tracks, we did have some very tedious middle sections of races, and I think that's what they're trying to stop. Whether we can trust the drivers when the red mist comes down is something else entirely. You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. It's Declan Brennan, John Hindhoff and Tim Gray. We're talking NASCAR and specifically the start of the season as we move into the big one, of course, being not a huge shunt caused by bump drafting injudiciously, but the Daytona 500. Much like Grand Am, the NASCAR season starts with its biggest race of the year. How big is it? Well, let's find out from Mark Martin.
You know, this is just a different race. You know, it spans a week and a half, and it's the Daytona 500. Everybody wants to win it. It's the crown jewel of stock car racing, and it is it's Daytona. It's the same every year.
One of the veterans of the sport and the big names, but he's not in a minority, of course. Carl Busch has a similar opinion and has been telling us exactly why it's so important to win this.
I'm excited about the season. You know, I think we got a lot to prove at RCR. We had a bad season last year. End of the year, you know, running strong, and I felt like I had a good direction. Off season, everybody at RCR has been working really hard. The engine shops brought some steam to the table, so I'm excited about the year. I think we're ready, and I'm ready to see how that's all going to play out.
Yes, my apologies. That was clearly Clint Bowyer there for Richard Childress Racing.
Just pick up on two things they both said? Well, first of all, if Mark Martin thinks it's the same every year, does that mean that Clint Bowyer will finish upside down and on fire again this year?
No, we've had that script. Dex, you've got to understand, that script's been written. We've got to go for something different this year. You know, actually, all joking aside, there is something about the magic of the Daytona 500, and it's always been, from a European perspective, it's odd to start your season with the FA Cup final, isn't it? You know, if you put it in soccer terms, or you know, start your American football season with the Super Bowl, or baseball with the World Series, and work backwards.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit odd to do that, but I kind of like the show that produces, in that everybody's coming off the off season and has to get there's no, when you and I go to work, Dex, we go in, we make ourselves a cup of coffee, we open the newspaper, we scratch our backsides a little bit, and then we turn the computer on, and then we get working. Right?
We both work from home, so I do that, and then occasionally, maybe by 10 or 11 o'clock, I get dressed.
Which doesn't paint a great picture. You can't do that in this sport. You can't do that in stock car racing, in the Cup, because you've basically got to come in full tilt, 100%, roll off the truck and be hot. Otherwise, for perhaps half the field who aren't in there on points or opposition, then you're struggling to even get in the biggest race of the season. It's like having Le Mans in January. You know, you base your whole season on getting into a race that you basically have no time to get up to speed for.
You're absolutely right. And to be perfectly honest, there's something about the qualifying system that is just fabulous. I love that they there's many events that, for example, Indianapolis, even now, they take too long to get to where they need to at Indianapolis for the 500. But this is just beautiful, the way the point, the qualifying, and the fact that you go through all of that qualifying, and then they pretty much disregard it. So you get the front row locked in, and then everybody else is all to play for. And even more so, John, with no testing. Now that they have no testing, it is, you're absolutely right, you have to hit the ground running. And that's why you get the odd team who should make it, not making it, and the odd guys. Tommy Baldwin's done it again this year. He's thrown it together, literally, and they've qualified. It's absolutely superb, and you love stories like that.
Can you imagine, though, Dex, if you put that into soccer mentality, football mentality here in Europe, it would be like not playing the Champions League final at the end of the season, but holding it over till August and saying to the two teams, oh, and by the way, your blokes have got to come straight to the European Champions League final from their holidays in Ibiza or the Seychelles or wherever they're going, without going training first.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's like. It's extraordinary.
Madness.
Absolutely extraordinary. And it's worse for the guys who are signing for new teams, you know, who have bizarrely get, you know, you've got no time then to really properly work with your crew chief, you've got no time to work with your spotter. And there's a lot of that, you know, people like Truex has moved to Michael Walter Bracing with a new crew chief. We have the same with Jamie McMurray gone to Earnhardt Ganassi. There's a lot of that going on. It's absolutely extraordinary when you think about it. And it's funny, I've thought about it, but never quite thought about it in those terms, but you're absolutely right. It is in a weird way to start the season.
Yeah, out of the nightclubs, you footballers, and straight onto the pitch. Now let's see who's good. See, when I used to play Sunday morning football up in the northeast, and it was 5 degrees below and playing on a muddy field, and I was playing goalkeeper, and you'd been out till 3 or 4 in the morning and your kickoff was 9:30, that sorted the men from the boys.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
the Daytona way. That is now, I've just realised, that's the 500 encapsulated.
Yeah, but they don't all turn up together in a van drunk from
unbelievable
South Beach in Florida.
I'm going to put you on the spot here for a moment, because obviously it's what we're talking about tonight is not just about Daytona, but it's going to kick off the season this weekend. So we've been majoring on what we've seen from Daytona at the moment. By the way, still raining at Daytona at the moment, if you're listening, at almost 8:45 in the UK here, and no qualifying has taken place so far. Waiting for word from NASCAR as to how that will go. Right, if he's racing for your life, Declan, this weekend, pick me some drivers who's going to keep us breathing.
Mentioned it briefly earlier about him, but I think that was a wake-up call for the field to see Casey Kane with Ford Yates power doing what he did. I certainly think there's obviously the usual suspects, all of the usual suspects, literally anybody in a Hendrick car or a Hendrick supplied car. So that would be, think about it in basic terms, that's the four Hendrick drivers plus Newman and Stewart at Stewart Haas Racing. After that, they're the ones that you go, yeah, probably. Then after that, the sort of the second tier, then you've got the guys who are on the comeback trail. And again, you've got to look at on a restricted plate track, and that would be the guys from Richard Childress Racing. That would be Burton, Clint Boyer and Kevin Harvick. Throw in Roush, and you've got all of the Roush boys you expect to do well. And then you suddenly start to look at none of them. If any of those drivers win, it wouldn't be a surprise, no matter what anybody tells you. Then the surprises would come if it's a Casey Kane in a Petty Ford, or if it's a Brian Vickers, for example, or Marcus Ambrose. That's where I think. So I would say I think Casey Kane would be the one who would be from outside of the big group would be the one I think could win it.
Pick a winner.
Casey Kane.
I'm sorry, I'm going to be really boring, and I'm going to say Jimmy Johnson.
But, John, I will say this, based on what I've seen of him race now, I think Juan Montoya now absolutely gets this.
It's time. It is time for him.
Yes, he gets it. I watched him in the duel. He dropped back. He had a problem. He got caught out. He picked his way back up and nearly won it. He was a long way off the pace. I think he gets it. And he now has, in Jamie McMurray, potentially a man who's won on super speedways.
Well, you see, I've been a fan of Jamie McMurray for years. I think he's been underrated. I think he is slightly, how can I say this? He is a bit like Terry Borchella in some respects. If the right Jamie McMurray turns up, he could actually win anywhere. It's just a question of him being in the right frame of mind. And if he turns up and he's fired up and he's feeling loved and he's feeling wanted, then I think that he's as good as anybody on his day.
Well, he's won the Pepsi 400. He's won at Daytona. I think he and Montoya, if they work together, could be a real threat. But as I said, I'm going to stick with Casey Kane. But okay. I definitely think Montoya is going to be a factor.
You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. This is Series 5, Episode 6. It's a special. It's Tim Gray, John Hindhoff and Declan Brennan. We're talking stock car racing, Daytona 500 at the weekend. Of course, hello to those of you on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, if you're listening live. If you're on the archive tuning in and you don't know what I'm talking about, well, shame on you, because you should be at least contributing somehow. Facebook, I know a lot of people don't like Facebook. Just go on, join in for the sake of the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective. They're a lovely set of people on there, very, very welcoming. And if you do have the chance to listen live, it's a bit like having program notes for the Open University, because quite honestly, you're missing half the fun if you're not watching that. Now, Tim Gray is our executive producer down in London.
Up.
Where would you like us to go next, Mr. Gray? Because we've already filled up 40 minutes.
I haven't given my prediction for the Daytona 500 winner yet.
Yes, go on.
So I'll just quickly bump in that I think it will be Tony Stewart.
Sorry, no bump guessing.
Bump guessing. Yeah, our rear legs are off the ground there. That's not fair.
Obviously, that is the first of the predictions that we're doing tonight. And it's also the first one we'll know who is correct. And we'll talk about that in next week's Midweek Motorsport.
Wednesday night, 8 o'clock UK time.
But obviously, the other predictions we make later on in this show will not be known until much later in the season.
Are you going to ask us for our dozen for the Race for the Chase for the Cup for the Thing and our winner and our Rookie of the Year, aren't
correct,
you?
Correct, yes.
Right, I better get NASCAR.com up for that.
I've already done mine.
You mentioned you thought Jimmy Johnson would win the race on Sunday night, mm-hmm. John. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Jimmy Johnson next. He's won 4 in a row. Can this be his 5th championship year?
Well, Declan, at the end of last season, when we did the review of the NASCAR Sprint Cup, said you wouldn't be doing yourself too much of a disservice by giving him the trophy now. Let's hear from Jimmy Johnson.
You know, the fifth championship is in the back of my mind, but truthfully, it is so far away from this part of the season that I haven't put a ton of thought into it, and I need to be realistic with my goals. And first of all, in order to be the champion, you got to make the chase. So first and foremost, we need to make the chase, and that means winning races. So we want to come out early and win races and put ourselves in a good position in the points so that we can make the chase.
Quickly, Declan, yes or no, will Jimmy Johnson make the chase?
Yes!
Yes. Now, since the end of last season...
I'm sorry,
season,
isn't that akin to Bears, Pope and Judith Chalmers passport question,
yeah,
really?
Exactly. I've just seen some film of a bear entering some woods. can you give us one of several possible outcomes to that?
Oh, dear me.
Now, has the Pope been seen in the woods?
there's a one-legged duck in a puddle outside, and yes, it's swimming in a circle. And right beside him, the Pope is wearing a funny hat.
Yeah, and being tremendously religious. Right, before
still very hungry.
Before we go on and talk a little more about Jimmy's prospects, let's hear a little bit more from him. And he's talking here about being a father.
In the summer, be a father. I have no clue what to expect. Friends that have been through it, and my wife and I have. You know, we'll do whatever it takes. She's extremely supportive of my racing and my career, and I know there will be changes, but I don't think the changes are going to affect what goes on the racetrack. we'll just take it as it comes. You know, it'll be a very special time for us. Luckily, it's in the middle of the season, and again, it'll be nice to hopefully have a bunch of points behind us that if I am a little sleep deprived, that it won't affect me too badly on Sunday, and we won't have as much stress going into Richmond.
So Jimmy Johnson talking about his slightly differing attitude. Racing drivers often say that families and family responsibilities change their attitudes a little bit. Having said that, it's seldom, Dex, that it makes them a worse driver. It certainly doesn't make them any more reckless. It tends to make them, and I can't believe I'm saying this in Jimmy Johnson's case, it tends to make them more considered. Now, as he is the Alan Prost of NASCAR racing, along with Chad Knaus, they are the masters of the tactical break. The guys who sit down and quite clearly work things out and don't let things fluster them. They let the races come to them, they let the tracks come to them, they let the distance come to them. I can't see that it's going to do him any harm whatsoever, being a dad, and I still think it's really hard to look at anybody else for the chase as a whole.
No, it isn't. Just a couple of things on the fatherhood thing. I think fatherhood has actually made Jeff Gordon a better racer.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Jeff Gordon has actually got better. I think he's obviously had a dip after his great years, and he dipped a little bit. But I think the last couple of years, he's coming back to the form that we know and love, and I think he certainly will be an absolute force. And how could he not be in that team? But yeah, the Chad Knaus, Jimmy Johnson thing is unprecedented. I can't think of any other form of motorsport where the driver and engineer have to have a key specific relationship, not just with the whole team, but literally the crew chief and the driver over such a prolonged period in any one race. So it's unique in motorsport, and theirs is a phenomenal relationship. Chad Knaus is a genius, and you've said it before, and I'll repeat it. I would love to see him crew chief and run a team in something like Le Mans or somewhere else. I think the man I think Jimmy could drive anything. I think he could crew chief anything. I think he's a genius. And they are they are, talked about it before, there's a symbiotic nature of this relationship is, I honestly don't believe Jimmy will be as good with any other crew chief, and I certainly don't believe Chad Knaus will be as good with any other driver.
No, and I'm not going to disagree with any of that, oddly. Not even for sure, to be honest, because I don't think you can. I think that when we have talked with people like Max Pappas in the past at length about the relationship that you need with your crew chief, it is so much more involved than your relationship in any other motorsport with, say, your crew chief or your chief engineer or your head mechanic or your number one or whatever. And you'll talk to people, I mean, come on, we talk to the best in the world on this show, thankfully. But if you're talking to someone like Mark Webber or Schumacher or McNish or Ron Fellows or any of the guys that we talk to, any of the rally guys that we talk to, quite clearly having a great relationship with the guys who bought your car together and the guy who you work with directly to set the car up and make the car work the way you want it to. Now, clearly, that's important. It goes one step further when we're talking about stock car racing, in that you've got your crew chief who has done all that with you, albeit with the rest of the team as well. I'm not decrying the other people's effort here, Dex. But at the same time, that's the guy whose voice is in your ears making the strategy call. That's the guy who's calming you down when some numpty has pulled out in front of you in the pit lane or pulled across the front of you in the pit lane when you needed a good exit to get out there. And for those who are listening who are sports car fans, if you look at the NFL Films documentary of Le Mans, it's called Truth in 24, that they made for Audi, there's a guy called H, who's the race engineer for Alan McNish's car, Alan McNish, Dindo Capello, and Tom Christensen, who win the race that that year, and he is everything to that trio. And that is the only similar type of relationship I have ever seen, Dex, in motorsport, because Formula One, you don't get it. The races are too short. It's all over in an hour and a half, and it's has been 3 20-minute sprints up until then. You don't get it in rallying because, you know, it's the co-driver and the driver against the elements and the track and the time, you know, the biggest competitor. But in stock car racing, and to a certain extent as well in the best teams in sports car racing, and maybe this is why I like the long distance stock car races as much as I like sports cars. Big shock there, there's a headline. Is that it is this, you know, there's as much talent on the wall thing. And they're making the tactical calls. I just think it is absolutely outstanding. And I think it's, for all that we see more of the crew chiefs now, I still think it's underplayed.
Yep, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. And I'd like to, if you could almost say that Hendrick in particular, when it comes to their crew chiefs, is a university. It's like it's a university of quality crew chiefs.
Yes.
They used to call USC quarterback university because of the amount of pro quarterbacks that University of Southern California produced, and it's just Hendrick is similar in some respects. Ray Evernham obviously was the man behind, masterminded the great years for Jeff Gordon. And there's a guy I just like to bring it to your attention. You might want to follow a little bit closer this year. A guy who's 34 years of age. And that's Alan Gustafson, who's crewing the five car. He's ahead of the five car. This car that people forget was second last year. Mark Martin was second. He brought a very young Kyle Busch in 07 to fifth in the championship. They were 10th in 06. He only started as a crew chief in 05. So, you know, he's barely out of nappies, and he's you know, he has already developed a phenomenal relationship. Mark Martin jumped into that car last year, you know, at a quasi-retirement, running he'd been running a sort of a full schedule, but not really jumping in and out of cars with people. He got back into that car, developed a relationship quickly, won more races than anybody else last year, and will be absolutely on the pace again this year, I guarantee it. And Gustafson, it's a lot of it is down to Alan Gustafson. Kyle Busch, I believe, learned a huge amount under him. That I don't think he's actually progressed since he moved there. He moved to Gibbs. I think he's an absolute star in the making in terms of crew chiefs. And arguably, he is the next best crew chief on a box in pit lane, in my opinion. And I think we should watch out for him and pay attention to how he and Mark Martin and how they talk this year and how they work together.
Before we move topics on, I'll just take a couple of comments from the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective. We're heading up towards the hour mark of our stock car special here with Declan Brennan, myself, John Hindhoff, and Tim Gray, our executive producer down there in London. James Broomhead and who was Kevin White and also Ollie Meggett discussing Ford engines, and we'll touch on that in just a moment. Kevin White also says, I wouldn't overlook any of the Penske Dodges at the weekend. There was a point during one of the dual races when all three of them were at the front of the field. Also, talking about Truth in 24H there. Someone else saying, I've just had thought exactly the same thing. Joe Taylor said exactly the same thing there. I took in what you've just written on the talkback there, Dex, and it paused me just for a moment. And I'll come back to that in just a sec. Or perhaps not. Still to come on tonight's show, it's episode 6 of Series 5 of Midweek Motorsport. We're on our NASCAR and stock car special. Moving away from the Daytona 500 this weekend, we'll be looking at the rest of the season. We'll also be revealing our picks for the Dirty Dozen that will be in the race for the chase for the cup for the thing, plus our look at the best of the rookies. We'll also take in the support series with ARCA trucks and, of course, the Nationwide. News on that, by the way, is that the Nationwide it looks like the nationwide qualifying has been cancelled.
Disaster for Parker Kligerman.
Well, because he see, now, in. There you go. Another friend of the show and very popular with our listeners, Parker Kligerman, who has been an absolute star in ARCA, and we love him as well, but it looks like his first Daytona attempt at qualifying in the Nationwide Series is going to fail due to the rain, Declan.
Yeah, you see, I said this to you off air, I'll say it again, it baffles me how they can't reschedule anything in NASCAR. They cannot do it, they simply won't. And they will, to the point where they'll cancel qualifying sessions, and then as soon as it's bright, they'll run a regularly scheduled practice session for the same series. And it's desperately annoying. And in this case, Parker's lost a chance to race in arguably the biggest race of the season for him. And he'll just have to make up for it later in the year.
Well, Parker, of course, plying his trade last year in the ARCA series, came very close to winning that championship. Well, Dan, ARCA is the new buzzword as far as stock cars are concerned. Say again, Tim, sorry?
I said, yes, it is. You can't get away from it, can you?
No, you really can't. Since Danica Patrick has made the transition from IndyCars to stock car racing, it seems as though the spotlight is shining just as brightly on her now as it was a few years ago when she came into open wheel in America. Well known around the tracks of the UK from her Formula Ford days, and before that in karting, of course. She has, up until now, followed a relatively traditional path for a road racer, or at least a Formula racer. But she's decided to make the transition into stock cars. A shock for some? Well, perhaps. Let's hear from Dale Earnhardt, who's got some views on the matter.
Actually, first we're going to hear from Danica.
Are we? Oh, yes. I didn't realise we had Mrs. Hospital on.
Yeah, she's here to explain why she's switching to NASCAR.
Perfectly.
No, I'm here because I want to race in NASCAR right now. And I think that the decision, I mean, let's face it, the opportunity and the idea has come up to drive in NASCAR many different times, and I never did it. So it's because this time I went, wow, I think the racing looks really fun. And I've really found that I like oval racing, and we're getting less and less of that in IndyCar.
Well, Declan, how do you react to that? Does it look like fun?
I like
easy.
Money, I do.
Now easy here.
I like money. I like money, and I like GM-backed factory teams with opportunities to give me very, very good cars and pay me very well. And all of those lovely, crazy nutcase followers who will go and buy my merchandise, that's what she likes. And
well, you mean the fans, Declan?
Yes.
It's a fan-driven sport, though, isn't it? I mean, there's a very fine line, and I'm slightly playing devil's advocate here, gentlemen, because I don't disagree with everything that Declan's saying. You know my views on Danica. I think she proves herself as a good driver when she proves herself as a good driver. She has been a reasonable driver in a series that is not full of great drivers recently. It'll be interesting to see how she makes the transition to stock cars as a driver. And as Ron Fellows told us at the end of last year, there's no physical reason why she can't drive one of these cars. They've all got power steering nowadays. But you've got to say, Tim, and I'm going to throw this to you as well, that in terms of re-energising spectator, fan interest and media interest in the ladder series towards NASCAR, then she's already done the job, hasn't she?
Yes, certainly Nationwide Series has, since the rumours of her racing in that this weekend first started, there's been so much interest in that. If you look at traditionally Daytona 500 weekend, the nationwide race is the one that nobody really cares about out of all the events that happen. I'd like to go back to the fans thing. Is her racing in NASCAR going to attract new fans who are different people from the people who were fans of her in IndyCar?
Declan.
No.
So you think she will bring? Dex, do you think she will?
No, let's rephrase that. She's going to bring a handful of fans. She's going to bring fans over, IndyCar fans who will watch NASCAR because she's in it. She's going to attract fans who know who she is because, for example, she starred in the CSI New York during the week and she does the GoDaddy commercials and people know who she is and she's generally a celebrity here. Therefore, there'll be fans who will watch her in NASCAR because, as far as they're concerned, NASCAR is the only form of racing that exists. Therefore, it'll be an opportunity to see her race because it's also on a channel that they can see, unlike Versus. So, yeah, it's going to attract casual fans, absolutely. It's going to attract NASCAR fans who probably wouldn't normally have watched. Maybe the guys, if you think about it, it's about 3-1, three times the size of the audience for a NASCAR race on a network than you do get for a nationwide race, a Sprint Cup race on a network, than a nationwide race on cable, on ESPN. That will get a bump. They'll get one of their highest ever ratings because probably more stock car fans will actually go out of their way to watch the Daytona nationwide race. I think that's a given. 2.4 million that watched on Speed for the ARCA race is absolutely astonishing. That's double what they got last year.
Isn't that more than what IndyCar get?
Oh my goodness! For everything but the 500, yeah, absolutely. So Speed for an ARCA race got more viewers for one race with Danica in it than IndyCar got for several of its races put together, which is frightening.
Danica has been telling us she's looking forward to spending as much time as she possibly can with the fans of NASCAR.
There's quite a few people here. But it is the Daytona 500 time of year, so people are excited about getting back to racing, so I can understand that. The NASCAR fans are always very enthusiastic from, you know, the perspective that I've seen them from, and I have a feeling I'm going to get an even closer look.
Now, I've spoken to Danica in the past. I've interviewed her. I've interviewed her before she got into a Ferrari at Petit Le Mans. I've interviewed her in other circumstances as well. First thing I noticed from that interview is she's far more confident than I've heard her before. She's far more lucid than I've heard her before. There's less ums and ahs and likes and you knows. However, she does sound absolutely petrified in that clip.
Well, she there's no question that the IMG training it was obvious last year when there was accusations that she was Stepford Danica from the start of the season, the way she was handling everything. It's clearly a huge effort on behalf of her management, her new management, which is IMG, who have taken her from being a very well-known celebrity with some endorsements to effective superstar status. You know,
that's the IMG way, though.
Yeah, absolutely. As you well know, as you will be very, very familiar with, and clearly her media training's paying off, and she's getting more confident. I would suggest you're absolutely right that deep down there's a massive, even though she got a sixth place in the ARCA race, she's going to be massively worried about her first time with the big boys, and she is going to be looking at that entry list. She's in with the big boys in this
Dex.
In this wide race.
Couple of questions, one from me and one from Kevin White on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective on Facebook. Kevin's first, will she attract more women to NASCAR in terms of the sport? Yes, okay.
Yes, she'll attract the young girls who idolise her, and there are quite a lot of those.
Okay, will the NASCAR experience change Danica? Or is that more likely to be the IMG experience that'll change Danica?
The IMG, I'm going to answer that question in a different way. I think the IMG experience will turn her into a NASCAR racer. I think they put her there because that's where the money is.
You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. Declan Brennan, you just heard there. And it's Tim Gray and John Hindhoff. We're talking the Daytona 500, NASCAR, and, of course, the Support Series. At the moment, we're going to wind up our little look at how Danica Patrick will affect the series by having a final word from Danica to see what she thinks about how NASCAR will affect her view of the world.
No, I'm here because I want to race in NASCAR right now. And
have we had that, Tim?
I think we have heard that one before. Let me find you. I know why I've pressed the wrong button there, yes.
Because all the clips are the same.
They are all the same.
I've never been afraid, to be honest. I have perhaps become more gracious over the last year or two as to how that comes out, but I will always be me. I will always be emotional. I will always have somewhat of a temper, and that's because I care. It means a lot to me. It means everything to me. When the race is good, when racing is going well, nothing else really matters. It kind of rules your life. And you know, actually, I think I heard Dale Jr. say that too. So that's just how we think. You know, it's important to us, so we have emotions.
I love how she positions herself as being special because she cares. Yes. I love that. It's utter cliched rubbish.
Right. All those other drivers don't care.
None of the other drivers care. Like, no edits in that, by the way. I listened very carefully to that, and Tim hadn't worked his magic on it. The background noise was absolutely spot on all the way through. So there was the ums and ers that you heard there and nothing else.
Tim hasn't had time to edit all these pieces.
No, I know
Tim
you haven't
listened to some of these before.
Clearly, yes. Interesting. Very, very interesting. She has had some fabulous media training because that is night and day better than where she was 6 months ago, even.
She's even self-awareness now to say, I used to be a bit surly, but she still is. It's
Somebody's told her to say that, though, Dex, in fairness.
Exactly, that's the problem. It's media training, so exactly.
She's dropped her voice as well. Have you noticed she's just dropped the timbre of her voice a little bit? She's speaking a little more quietly so that she's not straining her voice so much. And actually, I think in those clips, that's the best I've heard her interview ever.
Let's call a spade here about this. Danica absolutely can drive. You know, she clearly can. She's a racer. She works hard at her craft. So do lots of other people. Mm-hmm. She's not bad. Not bad at all. Her sixth place in the ARCA race, in spectacularly better equipment than everybody else, was all right. And as Nick pointed out the other day, as somebody pointed out, it was like a 18-year-old who'd never... Somebody, I can't remember who it was, but it's a brilliant, brilliant analogy. It's like an 18-year-old who'd never played Little League baseball before, a teenager walking onto a Little League baseball diamond. I mean, given a bat, and after 20 minutes working out how to hit the ball. Mm-hmm. And because they're 18, you know, the ball goes a lot further, and they were better equipped to play that day. And she was. She was in, literally, with semi-pro and kids starting off in their careers, with Sprint Cup style management, crew chief, engineering. And she came sixth, and she was good. I think the way they fawned over her in the TV was just ludicrous, and that's going to continue. And it's going to make it really difficult to watch that race on Saturday.
It's unfortunate. And I think it's ill-advised, Declan, as well. And I think I think that, if anything, will backfire on them, because anybody who does know the sport, anybody who is an aficionado, and maybe that isn't everyone who's watching in the States, if that's the case, but they will see through that. I just don't think you can get away with that kind of... I don't think you can get away with that kind of editorial control anymore. They've been told to big up.
Hindy, the TV is dropping and it needs a boost, but I guarantee you this, because it's happened with IndyCar. It's absolutely... The novelty will wear off.
Yes, yes.
The numbers will go down again. Because if you look at the numbers, the Danica effect, so it claims that the Danica saved IndyCar. Go look at the IndyCar TV and the Indy 500 TV numbers since she arrived. She steadied them for 1 year and then they've dropped. They're dropping and they're dropping again every year. This will be a minor blip. If they get a bump in their... It might even be as short as a couple of months. If they get a bump in viewing figures, you know, she's only doing 12 races this season. You know, they might get a bit of a bump when she's on. Maybe it's just the IndyCar fans are coming over to watch her. But it's you don't hang your hat on a girl who's probably going to finish 25th in your races. You know, it's insanity.
Well,
but you know
it's
what?
The same thing that I've said for IndyCar. We'll draw close to it on this because, you know, clearly we've fallen into the trap, if you want to look at it that way, because we've been talking about it for 20 minutes now. And, you know, she is a top 10 driver in IndyCar, where there aren't 10 good drivers, in fairness. Right, okay, Tim, let's move on. Where would you like us to go next?
She mentioned in that final clip Dale Earnhardt Jr., and obviously Declan has alluded to the fact that she's running for his team.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't have a NASCAR preview show without hearing from Dale Earnhardt Jr., and here he is saying he wants to put a smile on Danica's face.
She seems to be pretty smart, and so I try not to really get in her ear too much. I just hope that we give her a good car, and when she mashes the gas, it puts a smile on her face. So as long as she's having fun out on the racetrack, I feel like that I'll enjoy that part of it.
And we're not going to mention nicknames for Danica. Tim?
No, Paul Tracy's done enough of that on Twitter.
Yes,
and,
well, I wasn't
going to say anymore.
I wasn't going to mention that. let's stick with Dale Earnhardt Jr. for a moment and hear some more of his musings this week.
When people tell me, or used to say, back when we used to do the Rolling Stone stuff and the MTV Cribs and all that stuff, people would say, you know, I was one of the people that were taking the sport into the mainstream. I really took that as a compliment. And being one of the few drivers that could do that at that time, I was really proud of that fact. And, you know, I would like to think that I put the sport in front of a lot of people that would have never seen it before. And so maybe, you know, like I said, I'm in it to win races, and I want to, you know, when I'm done, you know, I want everybody to appreciate what I did on the racetrack. But hopefully I can do even bigger things aside from that.
Can he do bigger things? First of all, Daytona 500, and then we'll talk about the series. Whichever way you look at it, Declan, there's no doubt that, in part at least, certainly the short to medium term future of NASCAR may well be tied up with Dale Earnhardt, and that with Junior Nation and his incredible popularity and sales of merchandise. And, you know, and we've seen it ourselves when we stood in the stands at Daytona, that, you know, half the people there don't even care where he is on the circuit. But surely at some stage he's got to start delivering results on a more regular basis, and he's got to start delivering on the name.
He's 35 years of age. You know, it'll never happen, but the junior moniker has to disappear at some point.
Well, he's not junior
anymore.
He wasn't junior after the D's dad died. That's not how it works.
You know, yeah, he's Dale Earnhardt, and the problem is that's all he has is the name. And there might be people listening who are really, really big fans of his, but in all fairness, the comparisons with Danica and the fact that they're teamed up together has a massive irony, you know, about it, is that they're both far more famous than their talent deserves them to be. Dale has a level of talent. He can run, he can win unrestricted plates. He won with DEI when they were the kings of restrictor plates. I think he has to turn it around this year. At the very least, winning will be good at some point. He didn't win last year. He literally was handed a win at Michigan after he drove past the pace car in 2008.
Yeah.
He hasn't even really looked like winning. Although, I will say, and the encouraging thing for Dale Earnhardt Jr. fans would be that he did seem to start to gel with Lance McGrew at the end of last season, and it's probably something that they should have done earlier. You know, for
Declan,
years we said he's got...
Declan. How many times on Midweek Motorsport have we said the two things have to happen before we know if he's got any talent or not? First of all, he's got to get out of his father's team. Secondly, he's got a ditch. Tony Urey Jr., wasn't it, who was his cousin, who was his team, who was his crew chief, for exactly the reason that Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus works, as we alluded to earlier on, is exactly the reason why Junior and Tony Urey Jr. didn't work. They couldn't communicate. There was something between them, which, bizarre, given, I mean, sometimes, you know, blood is thicker than water. I don't know. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. But the kind of feedback that he gives to the team is famously pants. The car's not going very well. You know, but we've, come on, we've heard it. We've heard it.
Yeah.
And NASCAR and the TV coverage has not been shy in saying, how's the car, Dale? It's rubbish. And I'm paraphrasing now, often having to bleep stuff out. Right, what's the matter with it? It's rubbish. Where is it rubbish? Everywhere. What's it like into the corner? Rubbish. What's it like in the middle of the corner? Rubbish. What's it like on the out of coming out of the corner? Rubbish. You know, he's not feeding back. He's not got that confidence. He's not got that ability, perhaps, to relate back to the guy on the pit wall who can help him. And it's almost like some of those exchanges to me have sounded like that they're not on the same team. That it's almost like, why am I talking to you? Why are you talking to me? Why are you in my ears now? I'm driving at 200 miles an hour. Hang on a minute. And you've heard him say, I'm doing my best to keep this thing on the track, on the straight. Never mind getting around the turns. Now,
John, do you know what that is? I'm not an engineering expert by any means, and I only can go by what I read and what I hear and what I see. And he doesn't seem, he being Junior as opposed to Tony Urey Jr., doesn't seem to be able to communicate up to now with a crew chief who could then build a car and set up a car for him that would last more than about 10 laps. He certainly over the course of a long race, he really, really struggled. Junior has never, in his time at Hendrick, put in a consistent performance, even over the length of a race. I can't remember a single race where he has been a front runner the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, granted, he only has to be one at the end. I've seen him front running at the start. I've seen him front running in the middle. And funnily enough, you know, that's obviously a microcosm an extension of the way he goes through corners. He might be able to get through a corner all right. The middle might be okay. Sometimes the exit might be, but he never seems to be able to get a car together that's good into the corner, good through the middle, and good on exit.
The other thing that I noticed with him, Declan, is the good results that he has is if the car begins to get better through the day and he can see it moving forward. If he started well and he's running in the top 10 or even better, and then the car goes away from him, trust me, he's not coming back. Because this is exactly the point I was going to make. And everything that I said there about his relationship with his crew chief when it was Tony Urey Jr., put that to one side, because already at the end of last year, and you rightly mentioned it, the fact that the new relationship with Lance McGrew has, I think, it may not have delivered the ultimate yet, but I think it's moving in the right direction. And yes, he is 35, and Kevin White's saying, I think even the most hardcore of Dale's fans have to admit at this point it may never happen. He's too old, he's been at it too long. If he was going to be close to his father, it would or should have happened by now. I'm not disagreeing with that either, but I still think he's got something to give. I think he's got something to give to the sport with his name, obviously. He's obviously got big selling power. Interestingly, the Danica, who is on a similar vein there, as Carol has mentioned on the Facebook Collective, has the same thing. But I do think, and I mean, Dex, look at Mark Martin. Look at some of the older guys in the field. He could have another 10, 15 years at this. And if all of a sudden he comes good and starts winning, maybe this is the dawn. Maybe this is the dawn of Dale Earnhardt's career.
If you know what, the weird thing is, and I never thought I'd ever hear myself say this, I might start to root for him soon. Because I'm serious, because I actually, I can't imagine what it's like to have to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.
It's awful.
You know, I can't imagine what it's like to be to almost be a deity, you know, south of the Mason-Dixon line. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what that's like. And almost getting to the point where I think, you know what, it'd be nice if he could just get a little bit of success on the track, irrespective of the fact that he's making an absolute fortune off it. And the Lance McGrew thing, back to what I said about the Hendrick organization being a breeding ground for great, great engineering and crew chiefs. And Lance McGrew, another relatively young guy in exactly the same position. It's up to Dale. If Dale can just relax, he doesn't run the team anymore. He has to focus on driving. As people have said, he has got to get a little bit more focused on the track. If he can do that, and it looks like he's finding the balance with McGrew, I think he could be a threat this year. Although, when it comes to my choice for the top 12, you might be intrigued as to where I put him.
Right, okay. You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. We'll be asking Declan Brennan about his choices for the Dirty Dozen in the race for the chase, for the cup, for the thing. Also, who we think he's going to win the championship. And looking at the best rookie as well. A couple of other things I just quickly want to talk about before we go there, though. I'm just slightly throwing a spanner in Tim's carefully crafted programme schedule here. And I know, however, that we do have one clip left to play. Before we get to that, we touched briefly and mentioned briefly earlier on when we were talking about Daytona this weekend about Marcus Ambrose, Declan. And in the same vein as the outsiders, if you like, moving in to NASCAR, although totally differently from the way that Danik has done it, and perhaps even different enough to be worthwhile mentioning it from Juan Pablo Montoya and Sam Hornish Jr. and people before him, like Tony Stewart, of course, who came from Formula Car Racing. Marcus Ambrose may not be exactly his breakout year this year in the way that we're talking about JPM, but I do think he's got something big to offer the series this year, and quite clearly he is in, not perhaps to the extent that Danica does or even JPM does, but I think he's bringing some new interest to the sport, and he is clearly a very, very talented driver who, because of his background, has been able to make that transition into the very specialised world. And let's, you know, whatever everybody else says about drive fast and turn left, 3,500-pound cars doing 200 miles an hour still makes your eyes water, as far as I'm concerned. He's been able to make that transition and to make it well. And what I'm interested with over the last year or so that we've seen him on a relatively regular basis racing at the top level of NASCAR Dex is how quickly he's been able to garner some respect from the guys at the front of the field.
Well, he's got the respect because he's done it the right way. He's come in, he's learned his trade on ovals, and they really respect him now after his performances over the last couple of years on road courses. That's one of those things where they've gone, oh my goodness, look how good he really is, to the point where I would pencil him in for two wins this season.
Really?
At least two wins, and that would be both of the road courses and possibly an oval. But I would put him down. I would suggest, based on his experience in Super V8, that there isn't a driver, even Montoya, who arguably has the best car control in the entire paddock, I don't think there's a single driver who can drive one of those cars on a road course like him. I think he is just fundamentally hardwired to do that. And I go back to the last lap into the bus stop of the Nationwide race at Watkins Glen this year, when Kyle Busch was both angry and scared out of his wits as he was outbraked and taken over all four wheels over the curbs on the inside. He couldn't even turn in. He almost had to go straight on, because he has no fear, and he doesn't, at this stage, he has the confidence that he doesn't back down for anybody. And I think that sent a message to people. And I think he'll be a force this year on ovals too. We saw it a bit last year, and I've made some notes about who my game changers are, the guys who could burst into the race for the chase for the cup for the thing, and he'd be in that list. He's in with a good team, Jay, running entirely under the Michael Waltrip umbrella. He's well funded. They will be good. Toyota are solid now. They're going to be a good team this year, and he'll win a couple of races. As I said, I'd imagine he'll win both of the road course races.
Before we tie Declan to a chair and tickle his feet to get his predictions, I was going to say something else there, but I lost the will to live. Yes, indeed. Our last clip, Tim, is from whom?
Jeff Gordon.
Gordon's
there
alive.
Is no one more motivated and annoyed by our success than Jeff. And I mean that in a great way. I mean, he's in the same shop. He is driving the same equipment. He wants to be that guy, and he's always been that guy. And the competition that we have that spins off from all of that keeps our team on top. So, and I have to give him a lot of credit for managing the relationship side of it and setting a good example on how we can be so competitive and so annoyed with each other, especially he's been annoyed with me, but maintain a great friendship, the teammates, and how we operate and work. It hasn't been easy for him, and I really commend him for that, and that competition is what keeps us on top. And now we have Mark that's a part of that whole equation, that's the thorn in the side, that's on the same complex that is driving that, and hopefully we've made the right changes to the 88 to have him in that mix, so it's four of us frustrating each other each week.
Now, keen-eared listeners will have noticed that that was, in fact, Jimmy Johnson talking about Jeff. We pulled some of these interviews very late in the day, dear listener, but I hope you agree that it has added something to our preview of the season. All right, Declan, time to put your cards on the table. Pen and paper handy, Mr. Greer?
I have a pen in my hand.
Right. Declan first.
Can we spend a little bit of time rationalising as to who and why?
You can have one sentence.
Not too much.
You can have one sentence on each ones.
You don't make me too bad. All right.
It's like one of those things that you used to do on the chocolate bar wrappers. In 20 words or less, tell us why.
you've got as much time as it takes me to write down the name.
Okay. Right, Declan, what I need from you, first of all, in no particular order, I don't need you to put them in order, is the 12 that will make the chase, please.
Yeah, okay. I will start in no particular order with Tony Stewart. Mm. That is just that's a given. It would be insane for him not to make the chase.
Ranked sixth last year, just 343 points behind the champion.
Yep. This is a list I made earlier. Jimmy Johnson, obviously. I don't know why I didn't put him first. Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon. So that's the three. I expect all three of those Hendrix cars to be in with a hat on the side of their head, smoking a cigar, reading paper, mm-hmm. in all fairness.
Carry on.
I was going to suggest two. I think there are two people who are hardwired as competitors and racers to make the chase. And then arguably not do anything once they get there, or very little, and that's Matt Kenseth and Jeff Burton. I think Burton, Richard Childress Racing, are going to be stronger this year. We saw it towards the end of last year. Just quickly with them, because it's worth talking about, because we always end up avoiding the fact that the NASCAR's general state is quite precarious. They had a huge blow last year in terms of money, to the point where they reshuffled the team and Casey Mears lost his drive. And not only did he lose his drive, they lost a car out of that team. They're likely going to lose Kevin Harvick next year because he's coming to the end of his contract. But yet they pulled themselves back up off the ground towards the end of last year, dusted themselves down, and started to perform very well, including Clint Boyer. But I think Jeff Burton is super solid. He's that wily veteran, very much like Mark Martin. I think he'll make it, and I think Matt Kenseth will do the same. Matt Kenseth had a great start to the season, obviously, and clung on through consistency till the end of the season. But I think Burton and Kenseth won't necessarily be troubling the scorers at Victory Lane every week, but they're going to do very, very well and make the chase.
Right.
Juan Pablo Montoya, this is just another part of his progression towards elite status in it. I think once he wins in an oval, God help everybody else.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to happen soon. He's learned to play the long game now. He understands he's getting more patient. He has no crew chief issues this year. Crew chief issues this year. He's going to be fantastic. I guarantee you, doesn't have the best equipment, but they are running the same engines as Richie Childress Racing, and they are beginning to prove to be quite strong. So I think he is going to be a front runner every week and may win more than once in an oval this year. I rope Carl Edwards and Greg Biffle in together because I think as Roush, they are just they're going to be very strong. Edwards is going to bounce back this year. Biffle's Greg Biffle. He's going to be finishing, like, challenging for the top five every week. Carl Edwards is going to win races this year. How he managed to not win them last year is just almost too weird to contemplate. Then we have relative wild card, and that will be Kurt Busch. Again, I saw Kurt Busch proved to me last year how good he is by getting more out of that that Dodge Penske package than he really ought to have. And he's a terrific driver. Again, another guy who knows how to play the long game. Very, very good former champion. I think Kurt Busch will make it into the chase. I think Kyle will make it in. I think Kyle will have learned a lot from last year. I think winning the Nationwide Series last year means it's something less for him to focus on. I think his focus should be entirely on getting his right. And if he does, you know, there is the possibility that we could see the Kyle Busch of a couple of years ago. That is literally just putting himself in a position to win every week. And that would be to the point where he'll certainly make the chase. It would be almost apocalyptic if he didn't. And that leaves us with one last place, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think there's 9, maybe 10 or 11 drivers who could make that last spot. And I've called them the game changers, the guys who could potentially just turn the season on its head if one or two of them got in, because it would then see major established stars not making the chase. I think Clint Boyer could make it back in. I think Jamie McMurray could make it in. I think Ryan Newman has a very, very strong chance of making it in. I think Harvick could get in. I think Junior could get in. I think Vickers could get in. I even think Marcus Ambrose, with his increasing in performance and level of consistency across the year, could make it in. But I believe, because he's just that talented, I think Casey Kane's going to get in. I think Casey Kane is going to make the chase. So that's my 12. How's that, Tim?
That's good.
Right, certainly 12.
Tim,
yep.
Yours?
Well, I also have Casey Kane in my 12, and Mark Martin,
yeah,
and Tony Stewart, yeah, and Jeff Gordon,
yeah,
Juan Pablo Montoya, Jimmy Johnson, Carl Edwards, and Kyle and Kurt Busch. So now we go to where I diversify from Declan's
selection. Very good.
And I've picked Clint Boyer, who I know was very close to being in your top 12, Dex.
Yes.
I've also gone for Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't even. It's amazing, and that's just an oversight on my part. He would certainly be also one of them banging on the door. But just right now, I think the pack is that strong, which is extraordinary. But I wouldn't be surprised if he got in.
And finally, I'm going to go for a real, not so much outsider, but an unlikely candidate, David Ragan.
I've been struggling with that one as well.
Wow. Dave. Well, this is the year. You know what, Tim? That's a great call, and this is the year he's got to do it. You know, you don't get Roush equipment for that long, or you shouldn't, you know. Granted, Roush stuck with McMurray probably longer than he ought to, but you don't get Roush equipment, you know, just for turning up. You know, he's got to really, really do things this year. He's got UPS behind him. That's a big, big money deal, and they activate massively with him. They've got to turn him into a star, and to do that, he's got to start winning.
John, you're 12.
I'm not going to go for anything terribly contentious, I don't think, in no particular order. Tony Stewart, Carl Edwards. I think that Dale Earnhardt might sneak into it this year, and again, I'm kind of like torn by that, because, you know, we've had our moments with him in the past, but I kind of think he needs to, and I kind of think NASCAR needs him to.
You've also had your fingers burnt by picking him to make the chase in the last 2 years.
Yeah, John. And you know what? Maybe it's time he paid me off. Casey Kahane.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Kenseth.
Mm-hmm.
Denny Hamlin. Greg Biffle. Jeff Gordon. Mark Martin. Juan Pablo Montoya. And Jimmy Johnson. And I reckon that makes me with one other point, one other driver to put in there. Correct?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It does indeed.
I've got a real problem with the last people, because again, I've got to be honest. I think that we're going to be talking about the people on the bubble. I think we're going to be talking about places 10, 11, 12 through to about 20 come the end of the regular season.
I completely agree. Yeah, absolutely, we will be. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing struggle. I think it's going to be more interesting than the struggle at the front, to be honest.
No, I agree with you. And I think there's a lot of people there who have similar opportunities. I thought, particularly in the second duel last night, the fact that there was a pack and then another pack and the second sort of minor pack were battling for the transfer positions. I think that's what you'll see come the end of the regular season, that there'll be three or four or maybe even half a dozen people, drivers, who will be really there or thereabouts for the most part of the season, but maybe have a bit of bad luck, not score. And we've seen, haven't we, a few non-scores or bad weekends really throws you out of it. Will it beat any of the big boys? I'm not sure. But I like your analogy of these game changes or season changes that you've been talking about. And I think that's quite interesting. I'd kind of want to put Marcus Ambrose in there, but I'm just...
I think it's a year too early for him.
Exactly what I was going to say. Exactly. I like Tim's pick of Clint Bowyer. It was you that picked Clint Bowyer, wasn't it, Tim?
It was, yes.
I think, you know, that could be a smart pick. Ryan Newman could be there, might be there. I don't know. I kind of want to go to left field and pick somebody odd that might do it. I mean, obviously, we talked a lot about Michael Waltrip and Jamie McMurray earlier on. Waltrip didn't deliver last year. He's burned my fingers before. McMurray, like I said earlier in the programme, does it depend which one turns up? I don't know. I'm really, really torn. I'm really, really torn. Do you know what? I'm going to go for Jamie McMurray.
Jamie McMurray?
As a real outsider.
Okay.
As somebody,
I thought you might.
Sorry, Dex?
I said I thought you might.
Just if he gets a bit of luck and gets on a roll, we've seen that he can run at the front of the pack, Dex. He can do it.
Yes, he can. Yeah, absolutely. Whether he's in the right team to do it.
Well, that is the big unknown at this stage of the season. I was going to put David Reagan in there, but I thought that was too easy. All right.
Declan chose his 12 first. So, John, you're going to pick your champion first, please.
Jimmy Johnson,
Declan.
Jimmy Johnson.
I'm sorry to be boring, but really,
no. I've given up trying to be smart. I literally have given up. I've given up trying to be clever. It's going to be Jimmy Johnson again.
I'm also going to pick Jimmy Johnson as well. Not because I'm copying the other two.
He's got no chance.
I picked him in 2009, and he went on and won it. So that's good. I am going to go first for Rookie of the Year.
Okay. Who are the choices for Rookie of the Year this year?
I'm not going to tell you. You should know that.
Well, no,
have you not done any research?
I'm looking.
Let me tell you about who I've picked.
Just stop a moment.
Let me tell you who I've picked. I have picked, and the reason why, I'll explain in a minute. I've picked Kevin Conway because I think he's the only one who will actually make it through to the end of the season in terms of budget.
Right, I haven't even got him on the entry list.
Brad Keselowski is going to be Rookie of the Year.
Brad Keselowski's not eligible to
he's
be
not
Rookie
eligible.
Of the Year.
He is.
He's not.
No, he's not.
Right, hang on a second, guys. I've just been dissed by Tim for this. Right, I am looking at the drivers for the 2010 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series at NASCAR.com, and the only person who's got a rookie star next to him is Terry Cook.
Who is the other one? But he's short of money. The car has no sponsorship on it.
Terry Cook has been running trucks for the last couple of years, and he's been pretty good.
And who have you just picked there?
Kevin Conway. He's moving up from the Nationwide Series.
Right. He's He's not even on the start. He's not even on the driver list.
He has guaranteed entries for the first few races.
Mm-hmm. Can I apologise for it? I just completely slipped my mind that Keselowski had done enough races not to be considered a rookie, which means we have arguably the worst rookie crop in the history of to the point where there's no point in picking a driver. In all fairness, it'll be, you know, somebody might come in during the season with some money from somewhere else, and who knows, maybe even Danica could be rookie of the year.
She's probably going to have to do about five races.
Yeah, exactly.
All right then. Well, I'm going to pick the only rookie that is on the at the moment, who is a guy called Terry Cook.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Terry Cook as well. Okay. Number 46 on the list, number one in your hearts, Terry Cook.
He's driving a Dodge as well. I've got a soft spot.
The man we found out about as recently as 10 minutes ago.
It's just a moment ago.
But he'll be using, luckily enough, he's got Buddy Cisco as his crew chief, and they'll be using the painted Buddy Cisco system. So
Very good.
Thank you. We're here all week.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you've enjoyed that. We'll be following the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series and, of course, the Nationwide, the Craftsman Truck, and undoubtedly the Dan Arca Series for the rest of the year on Midweek Motorsport, which will be back on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock UK time. But before we leave you, there's one more thing from Tim.
Having done these predictions, obviously one thing is missing from our predictions this year.
Which is Nick Damon,
who did best than any of us last year.
Did we not have a playoff last year?
I think we did, actually, yes. Even so,
shall we add him in on Wednesday on the Midweek Motorsport, and then you can tack it on to the end of the podcast?
I will speak to him on Saturday, which is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And get his predictions off of him then. Cause obviously
off of him? How American. From him would have been just easier.
I'll get some predictions from him.
That's better.
So that he doesn't have the benefit of actually watching the Daytona 500 before.
Oh, good point. Good point. Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen.
Winning for the Daytona 500, at least.
Yeah, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you've enjoyed our ramble through the stock car season as presented by NASCAR with Sprint Cup Nationwide, Craftsman Truck, and the ARCA Series. Declan Brennan and Tim Gray joined me, John Hindorf. This was a Radio Show Limited production. Join us every week on Wednesday at 8 o'clock UK time for Midweek Motorsport. We'll keep you up to date with the whole of the season and the rest of the wide world of motorsport. But from me and the rest of the team, for now, it's bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.